Laboratory-grown diamond jewelry is projected to be the next breakout category of 2020 in the industry. It has rapidly become the most talked about topic in jewelry, generating buzz from vendors and retailers alike. Seminars, clinics, and discussion groups have all deliberated on the benefits and drawbacks about introducing this category into their store. Although most have embraced lab-grown, many retailers remain ambivalent towards this product category, and some unconvinced altogether. Hi, my name is Monica McDaniel, and I am the VP and Marketing Director at Chatham, better known as Chatham Created Gems and Diamonds. Today, I will talk to you about the value laboratory-grown gemstones and diamonds have in the minds of the ever-evolving consumer. I will briefly touch on its history, its processes, and how to seamlessly incorporate this product category into your store. Recent worldwide events have shown that one thing is for certain: the world is changing. In order to keep up, it is essential to stay on top of technology advances, new products, and consumer behavior to ensure you remain the expert in your field. Ask yourself, what value do you have to the consumer? In this day and age, when shoppers have instantaneous and endless options at their fingertips, how do you remain relevant? Become the gem authority in your community and advise your clients. Give them a complete experience of your expert knowledge while they shop for some of the most significant events in their lives. As a jeweler, you are there to inform and create the options that best suit the customer's criteria. Stay open to the unknown and learn how this product category can actually enhance the customer experience rather than take away. Lab-grown gemstones and diamonds are an addition to your existing inventory, not a substitute. It is possible and essential that the two product categories coexist. Before we dive deeper into how lab-grown is relevant today, we must first learn its rich history and how it came to be. The science and investigation into crystal growth began in the early 1800s in Germany. One of the first emeralds ever created in a laboratory was around 1845 by a Dr. Nockin. More research was conducted to further develop this creation, but none of the production was commercially viable. Meanwhile, a French chemist named Auguste Renoy was doing his own research and discovered how to melt the constituents of ruby in such a way that a quasi-single crystal was formed. Today, this process is known as flame fusion. Renoy's descendants went on to become the largest producer in the world, making flame fusion ruby and spinels for costume jewelry and watch bearings. Although flame fusion has the same hardness as an earth-mined ruby, it does not have the same crystalline structure and is easy to identify for even the beginner gemologist. In 1935, the first true duplicate of earth-mined emerald was announced by Carol Chatham, the forefather of our company today. His lab-grown emerald caused a lot of commotion and unrest in the gem world. The arrival of an identical copy of an earth-mined emerald sent shivers down the backs of Fifth Avenue jewelers, no doubt from their experience with a Mikimoto cultured pearl. The FTC trial started in 1959 and lasted 3 years. The argument was over how to name Carol Chatham's creations: synthetic, cultured, or created. In the end, Carol Chatham prevailed, and thus the term Chatham Created Emerald was born. A number of other companies have enjoyed equal success growing gemstones in the laboratory. A stunning flux emerald was introduced in the 1960s by a French scientist named Pierre Gilson. Lindy Company discovered a hydrothermal process of growing emeralds, and a few years later, an Australian company named Byron came on the scene with their own hydrothermal emerald. Flux, which was first introduced by Carol Chatham, involves chemicals that have no relationship to the crystal being grown. These chemicals are heated around 1200 degrees Celsius until they look like molten lava. Into this molten combination are dissolved emerald elements. Over the period of about 11 months, the molecules that make up emerald migrate towards the earth-mined seed crystals that are added after months of setup. The furnace is then sealed and untouched. At the end, when all the chemicals that make up emerald are exhausted, the furnace is drained of molten lava and allowed to cool naturally over a period of days. Only then can the results be evaluated. Each run produces thousands of carats of emerald, but most is not up to the gemstone standards. Typically, the flux process loses about 80% of lab-grown emerald in processing and cutting. This process most closely duplicates the conditions deep within the earth. As the name suggests, the hydrothermal process uses water instead of molten chemicals. Water, you ask? Well, water is the universal solvent because at high temperature and pressure, everything and anything will dissolve in it. The hydrothermal process is much faster than flux, taking only a few months to grow, but due to the extreme pressures, the furnace is small and only produces a few hundred carats per run. Chatham produces emerald by both of these methods today, having purchased the rights to do so. In addition to the emerald created in 1935, Chatham was the first to produce a flux ruby in the 60s and an assortment of other rare gemstones throughout the years. In fact, did you know Tom Chatham began growing diamonds in the 1990s? Diamonds have a different story. The search for man-made diamonds was triggered by the 1797 discovery that a diamond is a form of pure carbon converted into crystalline form by high temperatures and pressures. Many scientists became fascinated with this discovery, and attempts were made to recreate it under laboratory conditions, mostly in Europe. This desire is what feeds the quest of scientists then and even today. The closest ever achieved to making diamonds in the early days was from a renowned French chemist, Henri Moissan. He speculated that the diamond must somehow form deep in the earth under tremendous pressure and heat. Concentrations of iron and nickel were found where diamonds were being mined. Dr. Moissan theorized that if the iron and nickel were combined with carbon in a liquid state or molten, one could make diamond crystals grow if enough pressure was applied. He began a series of experiments and successfully grew white crystals that easily cut glass and other hard surfaces. Only, it wasn't diamond. It was identified as silicon carbide, a naturally occurring, very hard material, which today is known as moissanite. It is necessary to point out that a moissanite is considered a diamond simulant, which is different from lab-grown diamonds. A diamond simulant is any material used to imitate a diamond, but it does not share the same chemical and physical properties. A lab-grown diamond is identical in chemical and physical makeup to that of a diamond. Diamond is not only admired for its undeniable beauty, but there are also industrial needs for diamonds since they are the hardest material on Earth. Without diamond, some metals could not be machined, like beryllium metal. Up until World War II, the use of low-quality earth-mined diamond was enough to keep production going. However, that supply was under the control of De Beers, and it became difficult to keep supplies up during the war when so much of the heavy machine work was being used for armaments. So there was quite a race to make diamonds in the lab. In 1955, General Electric, through the work performed by Tracy Hall, announced they had successfully grown diamonds in a lab. Although GE takes the credit and the patents for this accomplishment, it has since been discovered that Russia and Switzerland were growing diamonds before that time. However, Dr. Tracy Hall was awarded the grand prize, a $10 savings bond, for his achievement. Today, diamond making has become a fine art. Crystals up to 100 carats in size have been grown in Russia. Even De Beers is growing diamonds for industrial applications and for jewelry. Today's overall production of lab-grown diamond exceeds 5 billion carats annually. There are two ways of growing diamonds, HPHT, or high pressure, high temperature, and CVD, chemical vapor deposition. In the HPHT process, presses use 725,000 PSIs, or pounds per square inch, of pressure at 1300 degrees Celsius. If you tried to grow diamond without high pressure, you'd get graphite. Presses can produce about 100 carats at a time in about a week to 10 days. Diamonds that grow this way can be remarkably pure. To grow colorless diamond using the CVD process, methane gas is subjected to high energy plasma radiation. Methane has one carbon atom and four hydrogen atoms. Microwave energy heat is used to break the atomic bonds in methane and free the carbon to float down and attach to a diamond seed, growing a diamond crystal atom by atom. CVD offers a larger range in color and clarity and typically produces about 140 carats in about 12 days. Growing diamonds is challenging and expensive. A press alone, which is used in the HPHT method, costs about $500,000. Though expensive to produce, the price difference between lab-grown and earth-mined diamonds generally varies from about 30 to 80% depending on the size, shape, and quality. The general rule is that as the quality and weight increases, so does the price difference. You'll notice I've only used one term to identify each category: lab-grown and earth-mined. I can't stress enough how important it is to use the right terminology. These two terms prove very effective because of their visual connotation. The emphasis becomes on the environment in which they grew rather than what they are. Growth above ground versus below the ground. If you take away that factor, they are identical to each other chemically, physically, and optically. If you consistently use this terminology to identify and differentiate these gemstones, your staff will naturally pick it up as well, and a unified message will be carried throughout the entire store. Very quickly, your customer base will know and understand the difference. A part of being a trained gemologist jeweler is to avoid saying words like synthetic, real, and natural. Synthetic is a misnomer. It is synonymous with artificial or fake and only confuses the consumer further. Too many products today are called synthetic that are not identical to the natural counterpart. Think synthetic oil, synthetic rubber, or even synthetic leather. All three are only a simulant. That is why the FTC recently cautioned against using synthetic. Even the GIA is beginning to retire the word in favor of laboratory grown. Likewise, if you imply that an earth mined stone is real, the immediate implication is that lab grown is not real or fake. Words matter, especially when you are advising and educating your customers. The lab grown category is strong and here to stay. Our goal, above all as jewelers, is to create the opportunity for consumers to buy more jewelry. According to Deloitte's Luxury Goods Report of 2019, a new consumer class is growing, and they are called the Henrys. High earnings, not rich yet. This segment is expected to include some of the wealthiest members in society. They currently earn between $100,000 to $250,000 annually. They average 43 years old, they are digital savvy, they shop online, and they are big spenders. It is recommended that luxury retail target this new class by offering, quote, inclusive yet individualized and self-expressive products, end quote. What better luxury category than jewelry to satisfy this shopping experience? Jewelry represents self-expression, creativity, and self-reward. It expresses love, friendship, and gratitude. It holds value, both economic and sentimental. Deloitte also reported seeing the highest luxury goods sales growth in cosmetics and fragrances in 2019. As jewelers, we must bring the attention back to jewelry. Let's come together as an industry and reignite the passion for jewelry, gemstones, and diamonds together. Consumers understand that the world is always changing. It is no different in the jewelry industry. What once was taboo is now embraced across all networks. Rather than approaching this with fear and reluctance, recognize that as a jeweler, you are now opening your doors for a wider audience by introducing lab-grown. To incorporate this category into your store, you must first understand the consumer's needs. Pick up on descriptive words they use or their movement through the store. As a jeweler, recognize their desires and guide them. There are countless misconceptions surrounding lab-grown gemstones and diamonds that need to be cleared up. The most common being that this category will cannibalize your earth mine sales. On the contrary, lab-grown expands your market and consumer base. It exposes your entire inventory, allowing for comparison shopping within your store. You become the full-service jeweler in your local market. With regard to color, the real value in lab-grown gemstones is that they can be produced in the rare qualities in earth-mined stones that command astronomical prices at auction without giving up anything in return. Color and clarity are typically superior in lab-grown gemstones, especially using methods that duplicate the conditions deep within the earth. Consistency in color is another great benefit since the conditions in a laboratory are far more stable than in the earth. This allows for less fracturing and impurities during the growth process. The advantage to the consumer is being able to buy the quality and beauty that made that mined gemstone so sought after in the first place. With that said, understand that growth is fragile, both underground and in a laboratory. Outside barometric pressure affects growth inside a chamber, and the computer system has to adjust accordingly. With regard to earth-mined gemstones, it truly is spectacular and rare to mine clean gemstones out of the earth because the planet doesn't remain stable for very long. Both of these facts are incredible selling points in favor of both categories. Don't be afraid of offering a lower price option. Take Mercedes, a German luxury car maker. They recognize that every driver is unique, and that is why they offer 85 models in a range of prices to match each of their customers' needs. Do you think they were afraid that lower-priced models would take away from their higher-priced vehicles? No, they weren't. And they have remained at the top of the luxury class for almost a century. Let's also not assume that with a lower price comes lower value or quality. In 80 years, Chatham lab-grown gemstones have never depreciated. On the contrary, the value has only gone up. With advances in technology and improvements in processes, the quality increases significantly. Did you know other industries are also incorporating laboratory-grown products in their product line? Stella McCartney, a fashion designer at the forefront of responsible and sustainable design practices, has partnered with a biotech company called Bolt Threads to incorporate laboratory-grown spider silk into her fabric mix. She understands that as a designer, she needs to evolve with the consumer and create products that fit the world we live in today. By putting the emphasis on the customer's needs rather than the sale, you have revealed yourself to be authentic and trustworthy. Remember the Henry's customer segment I mentioned earlier? Deloitte reports their core values include, quote, authenticity, relatability, commitment to do the right thing, and following sustainable practices, end quote. Luxury brands and retailers are thoughtfully adopting these values themselves in order to reach this demographic. Here's a quick story that might give you perspective. One evening after a long day at a show, the president of Chatham took us out for dinner. We had already finished our meal and we were considering ordering dessert to cap off the night. The waiter approached our table and tells us what his favorite dessert is on the menu. His choice, cheesecake. Well, if you know the president of Chatham, you know he hates cheese. As for the others at the table, one is lactose intolerant and can't have dairy, and the other only ever orders chocolate. It was an interesting moment because we had just spent hours selling and pitching retailers at a show. Harry, the president of Chatham, says, "Wow, I didn't realize he was joining us for dessert." Well, of course, we all laughed. Then he proceeded to take this opportunity to teach us something very important. Rather than talking us through the dessert menu and trying to gather information about our likes and dislikes, the waiter was focused on his own. Needless to say, we didn't order dessert that evening. The customer isn't in your store to buy you a gift. They're there to shop for someone you don't know, at least not yet. Listen, learn, and advise. Begin offering your customer options, and you will see that closure ratios will go through the roof. Search engines will show product faster than you can. So instead, inform and guide. That is why the customer is standing in front of you inside your store. They are looking for authenticity, expertise, and genuine support. There is no denying the true beauty of earth-mined gemstones and diamonds. That is why a lab-grown counterpart came to be. Lab-grown does not exist to compete. It exists to share the limelight. Presentations shouldn't include bias. They should only inform. Your mission as a jeweler is to create a customer for life. Win them over with your expertise and knowledge, because at the end of the day, knowledge is power.